Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
Hi there and welcome along to the programme. I'm Declan Ralph.
And I'm Dave Daly.
As usual, to begin with, in a few moments, the Nearby Business News Desk with myself and Dave, where we will discuss some of today's business headlines.
This week in the business of, it's Miriam McDonald, co-founder and director of Underfoot Designs, and she joins Declan to talk about her fingerless-based business.
Also, after that, our radio columnist Jenny Tyrrell looks at what is available in order to help us and encourage us to shop locally this Christmas.
After that, David Bell from the HR department is here for our regular look at HR issues. This week, as remote working has become a reality for a lot of people, what obligations do employers have to their employees in this regard?
Finally then, PR guru and American election expert and fanatic, Mr. Paul Allen, will join Dave to look at the implications of the result in the election in the US of A for Irish businesses. Now, if you'd like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories this evening, well, you can contact the show by text while we're on air. The text line is open and the number is 087-69-44-500. That's 087-69-44-500. Or, of course, you can get in touch anytime on Twitter at @nearby_business, #localbiz.
News Desk on Nearby Business.
So, welcome along to the Nearby Business News Desk. Now, Dave, first story we have this evening is, does your business want to be on the radio?
Yeah, well, Leo Fingal has just launched a new and exciting Shop Fingal initiative to help local businesses to promote their products and services. As part of this promotion to encourage customers and consumers to shop local this Christmas, we're offering up to 20, and this is, I'm talking on behalf of Fingal, up to 20 Fingal business-to-customer business opportunities to place advertisements with a series of Dublin radio stations. The 20-second ads will feature on the following stations: FM 104, 98 FM, Spin, 103.8, Q102, Sunshine and Nova. Also, Near FM and Phoenix FM are included in that, giving a little bit to the community radio stations too, which is great to see. The cost to successful applicants will be just €100 in return for an advertisement on radio, which is worth up to €1,500. The unique initiative, funded by Leo Fingal, will give an extra boost to the businesses during the current COVID restrictions while supporting trade in the region in the run-up to Christmas. The eligible people to apply for the radio advertisement, if you're in business, should be, you know, employ no more than 10 people, be locally owned and based in Fingal, operate on a business to customer basis, offering either products or services to customers, operate a for profit business, and have been approved by Leo for a trading online voucher before October 30th this year. So that means you would have set up the website for online trading and gone through the program there. So successful applicants will be contacted and invited to pay the €100 to secure the radio ad. Up to 20 eligible businesses will be selected to participate in this, and their suitability for this pre-promotional Christmas will be just based on what I said there. Over 80% of Ireland's population tune into radio every day, making it an enormously powerful marketing tool to drive people to your business. The Shop Fingal Radio Promotion Initiative is an exclusive opportunity for you to boost your sales, and if you're eligible, we strongly encourage you to apply as soon as possible. So the places there are up to 20, and it's great to see
great
that
opportunity.
And
yeah.
it's given a few quid around to the radio stations as well.
Excellent, yeah. Oh, great opportunity. Now, Ireland's economy, in fact, is the best of a bad lot at the moment.
Well, hopefully the Irish economy is expecting to be one of the best performers in the EU this year, albeit that activity will shrink due to the impact of what you know what. According to the new forecast from the European Commission, now the Commission expects the Irish economy to shrink by 2.3% this year, a performance only bettered by Lithuania and significantly below the 8% hit predicted in the spring. So they were saying everything was going to fall out. 8% is massive. 2.3% is quite big, but it's not as bad as you can see. Yep. The Commission expects a return to growth for the Irish economy next year. Key to the difference in forecast is the performance of multinational sector with a strong production and exports of pharmaceutical and IT companies, key to improved outlook. However, the impact of the investment in Ireland is the worst in the EU, and is set to shrink by 41.3% in 2020 before returning to strong growth next year. Employment here is expected to fall by 3.6% next year. The forecast notes that employment support schemes such as the pandemic unemployment payment have helped to soften the economic blow to date. A surge in the COVID infections has triggered lockdowns across the continent to prevent healthcare systems being overwhelmed and darken the EU's economic outlook, and that came out in the Commission's autumn forecast.
Yeah, so not doing too badly, although it's difficult for everybody at the moment. Yeah. Okay, now, not so good news, I suppose, with this story. Caterpillar, they're the big machinery people, they plan to cut 700 jobs up the road in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, this came out today. They make a lot of different things, including earth-moving equipment and stuff like that. They make also very nice yellow boots if you see them around the place.
Great.
So they've diversified and innovated. But this is not what's happening up in Larne. They announced today US manufacturers plan to cut up to 700 jobs in the north, and it'll affect workers at the Larne County Antrim plant. It's expected to be completed within 18 months, and it's designed, they say, to ensure a competitive future for the firm. They say they're a world leading manufacturer of generators up there, so that's a slightly different business than the diggers, but they have a very distinctive triangular logo. You remember, you might see it. I think it's black and yellow.
Yep.
Joe Creed, vice president of the electric power division, said, "We recognise that what we are considering is difficult for our employees and their families due to in the community in general. But we do not take these contemplations lightly. However, we must plan for the future, and business needs to be competitive. The Caterpillar manufacturing facility at Springvale will not be affected by the job cuts. The total number of employees they have in Northern Ireland is 1,600, and the announcement is part of the company's ongoing plans to better utilise capacity and improve cost competitive." Now, I just heard an interview this afternoon with the union rep up there, and he said that they believe the jobs are being relocated to India, and they're not happy about that, but that's something they're going to take up with the Northern Ireland Assembly and their representatives up there.
Brilliant. Okay, thanks for that, Dave. That's the nearby business news desk for this week. In a moment, I'm going to talk to Miriam MacDonald from Underfoot Designs, based up the road in Finglas.
You're listening to Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM. Every Thursday at 6 p.m, the local, national and international business news headlines, with a focus on what affects us here in Northeast Dublin. Regular features on the programme will include the Business Of section, where each week a different industry or industry leader will be here to chat about what makes their business work. The latest tool and technology needed to make sure your business remains at the leading edge. HR issues will be discussed, as well as a particular focus on looking at matters from the employer's point of view. Being an entrepreneur can be a lonely pursuit, so there'll be a regular look at what supports are available for business in the local area. And a host of special features as well. Don't forget, if you would like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories, you can text while the show is on the air to 087 69 44 500 or at any time on Twitter at @nearby_business. Near FM's business programme is Nearby Business. The Business Of on Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM.
And welcome back to the programme. Now, this week in The Business Of, I'm going to talk to Miriam MacDonald, who is the co-founder and director of Underfoot Designs. And Miriam is on the line now. How are you doing? Miriam? Sorry, we couldn't hear you there.
All right.
How are you?
I'm here. I'm good, thanks.
Great.
I'm good, thanks.
Very good. Good. Miriam, I suppose let's get down to business and talk about your business. I mean, where did the idea come from for Underfoot Designs?
Well, what we do is we design and produce personalised mats and rugs for homes and businesses. And we like to think we're different, and that's probably where the idea came from. So myself and my co-founder, Niamh, we were both working in a facilities management company that focused a lot on hygiene, and as part of that, they rented mats, but they were kind of boring. And if you look at mats around the city, you'll see they're either dirty or dull. You know, they're the two options. And we both have design backgrounds, and we felt there was so much more that could be done. We saw that there was no one doing anything like personalization in mats for homes. And then we also felt that we could produce much nicer designs for businesses. So that's where the idea came from. And we have contacts from that company. We set about setting it up. And now today we designed mats and rugs for homes and for businesses. We have templates that people can pick if they can't design themselves. But if people want to come up with their own design, they can do that as well.
Brilliant. Yeah. So they can use their own imagination and not have a dull, boring, dirty or dark mat, as you said.
They can. I mean, one of our slogans is make more of your floor.
Very good.
Because we feel that this is, if you look at a shop, you know, they spend a lot of money on the inside of the shop doing it up. And then as someone comes in, it's just bland, where they could use be using that point of entry for branding, for giving key messages to customers or selling their products.
Yeah.
And similarly, on the domestic side, we have people who, they put their house names on the mats, they put their family names, that's really popular. But we also have, provided it's high resolution, we have people who put their pet mats, their pet photographs on mats. We can put anything on a mat. And one thing I would say is, if you buy a mat in a shop, it tends to be printed onto it, and then it wears off after about 3 months. Ours are actually, when we produce a mat, the image or the colours or whatever are right through. They're actually part of the mat. So every mat is produced individually for the customer. And the value of that is, and that brings me back to the hygiene point, all our mats are washable.
Right.
So they can be washed up to 200 times and the image doesn't get lost and they continue to look fresh. And in this time of COVID, really important too from a hygiene point of view, keeping everything clean.
Brilliant, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, when did you start the business? How long ago was it?
We started the business nearly 2 years ago, the beginning of 2019. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I suppose things are we're going along nicely till the till the dreaded COVID. How has COVID treated you? Has it been some businesses have gone well and some haven't? So how has yours done?
Yeah. Yeah, when it started, like everyone, I think the first week or two for everybody, it was like as if a bomb had exploded. You know, everything went quiet. But then it began to create opportunities for us on two fronts. Because we have the ability to print anything on mats, we developed a range of safety mats with all the COVID messaging, keep your distance, wash your hands, sanitize. We then developed, because there was some talk at the time with COVID that coronavirus could come in on the soles of feet, and that was a big concern for creches and schools. So we have sanitizing mats. And then because of our background, because we worked with the facilities management company, some of our customers asked us, could we get our hands on sanitizers? So we developed sanitizing hygiene stations with a mat, dispenser, sanitizing fluid. And just with all the publicity in the last couple of weeks, I should say our fluid has, it has shea butter in it, so it keeps your hands nice and soft. So that was on the business side, and on the consumer side, we just took off because everybody was sitting at home, online shopping. Now it did create a challenge for us. We had to quickly upgrade our online presence and, you know, make it more streamlined. But yeah, so now we have a really good online shop where people can go and select their design and go from there.
Brilliant. So technology, obviously, I'm sure it was an important part of business before this, but it sounds like now it's really very important to the overall success of the business.
It is, because if you think we, as I said, we have template designs, but we also, you know, can design anything for anyone. So having that ability to have the templates up there that people can pick and then just personalise it themselves, and then also having the ability to upload images, and we can look at images then quickly and say whether they work or not, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, technology is very important for us. And then we usually send customers back, you know, this part isn't streamlined. That would be our next step, to have, we send customers back PDFs of what their mat will look like their rug before they buy it.
Right.
And it'd be nice to get that streamlined. That's a bit more complex, so.
Yeah. Oh, great. So, hopes for the future, Miriam, you know, what, or plans maybe that you could share with us?
Yeah, we're very optimistic. I mean, immediately, obviously, Christmas is coming, so we have our Christmas range of mats, which are Christmas themed, or people are just buying it for Christmas presents. But looking further out, we think the whole area of outdoor living presents an opportunity for us, both in the home and in work, in businesses, because you know, for the next, well, they're saying at least another year, we'll be in some form of COVID living.
Yeah.
So we can do, all our mats are capable of being used outdoors, but then we have other solutions for patio furniture, for restaurants that need mats outdoors, they still need to be branded.
Yeah.
And then on the domestic side, when we look at, like if you look at other countries, America, Canada, the Netherlands, the domestic market here is very underdeveloped. So there, you know, it's coming in Ireland. For example, if you go to somebody's house now, they ask you to take your shoes off. You know, that's perfect place where somebody would need a very nice little mat or even with something with footprints on it or something.
Yeah.
And then what's an interesting development is people in America and Canada are beginning to use mats at the sink. Because if you can imagine, if you have a porcelain floor or something like that, you don't want it, it gets quite slippy when wet.
Yeah.
So they're using little designed mats at the sink in you know, consistent with their overall design. Yeah.
Brilliant.
So it just makes a difference rather than going out and buying a boring mat.
For sure. And tell me, yeah. is most of your business domestic, or are you exporting at the moment, or how is that side of things?
Well, we can export, but it's very odd at the moment.
Right.
Mainly it's within Ireland. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Mm. Well, Miriam MacDonald, who is the co-founder and director of locally based Finglas business Underfoot Designs, thanks a million for taking the time to talk to me on Nearby
Business
Today.
Thank you for having the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Declan. Bye.
Bye-bye. That's Miriam MacDonald there, as I said, founder and co-director of Underfoot Designs
very
in Finglas.
Great
business day,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Wonderful. I've a few different ones around over the years. There's a crowd called Magic Mats used to sell. And then we had the guy from the big commercial version of that. But it's great to see that they're looking at the in-betweeny domestic market.
Domestic business as well. Yeah, absolutely.
And this week, our Radio Commons Jenny Tyrrell looks at what is available for us in order to help and encourage us to shop locally this Christmas.
Taking care of business on Nearby Business.
Nunaconaguit is being moved from Wicklow Street to Grafton Street this year, but I wonder who will be there to see it. Who will be in our cities and towns this year to watch the turning on of the Christmas lights, to pay a visit to Santa, and to sip mulled wine? Right now, as we enter our third week of Level 5 lockdown, we can only hope and wish we'll get to enjoy some type of new normal Christmas in 2020. A Christmas miracle, if you wish. During any crisis and in a pandemic, there will always be winners and inevitably losers. Right now, up and down the country, the high streets have been decimated with permanent closures happening on a regular basis. Announcements through Facebook and other social media platforms are now seen daily. Family-run businesses that have survived for generations are now in crunch talks, brainstorming meetings, and now evaluating and planning on how to keep their businesses afloat and survive into 2021. Will the Christmas of 2020 be cancelled? Large high street brands, small boutiques, hairdressers, cafe, pubs and restaurants have all been now forced to close for a second time. As we near closer to the normal Christmas rush, one can only hope they will be allowed to open in time to save their businesses and recoup some of 2020. Local councils are now looking at feedback from trials undertaken during the first round of closures, which saw more pedestrian areas and outdoor seating being installed. They now want our cities and towns to be more inviting and more accessible for when they do eventually reopen. While nothing can compare to visiting a store, trying on or touching the goods in person, and experiencing the atmosphere of a store, online shopping has become the new norm for a lot of consumers in recent years. One key demographic, the millennials, have never known life without online e-commerce. Instagram influencers are now a marketer's dream and form a valuable part of advertising and marketing strategies. Still a fairly new channel and not without issues, but no doubt leading the way, allowing for smaller budget investment in return for larger sales and brand coverage. A simple swipe up on an affiliated link and the product is yours in minutes. Irish people rank as one of the biggest international online shoppers in the world. For many people, online shopping this Christmas may be their only way to shop, possibly due to cocooning or for fear of venturing to crowded streets and stores. This year, according to Google, they have seen huge increases in searches relating to shop local, buy Irish, and Irish gifts. Already, new trends are emerging where Irish consumers are intending to support their local businesses at this crucial time. Interestingly, we are also now seeing some new and innovative ideas appearing every day. Some counties have partnered with One For All gift cards and have introduced local county gift cards. In County Clare, for example, over 50 businesses so far have already signed up for the scheme. Vouchers can be purchased through the local chamber's website, and they are encouraging employers in the area to gift their staff with bonuses of up to €500 tax-free in Clare County vouchers, which can be spent exclusively in County Clare. This will give local people a fighting chance to support local businesses, which will in turn boost the local economy and sustain local jobs. Wicklow has also introduced a similar scheme, and let's hope other counties will follow suit. Consumers may be looking to buy local, but they're also looking for unique gifts. A Facebook group set up recently by a lady called Teresa Venables has seen over 115,000 members join her group Shopping in Ireland in just over 3 weeks. In this short time, there has been over 46,000 posts, which is deemed as a huge success. The group is made up of consumers, local artists, crafters, bakers, clothing designers, and vast amounts of other small entrepreneurs. Shop in Ireland allows small town or local stores such as boutiques and gift shops to also showcase their products or stores, pricing and other details such as delivery details and the background to their business. There are lots of amazing talented people and brilliant backstories in this group. Some members have also set up innovative businesses due to being furloughed or let go during the pandemic. With many small businesses having only a Facebook page to advertise, this was the perfect group to amalgamate all these wonderful businesses together in one place. I can now search the group and I can buy beautiful pebble art from a business called The Crafty One, or order a home barista coffee machine and all the parts from the coffee bean grind, ideal for someone working from home for the foreseeable future. I can also choose specialised sensory products right through to sentimental and personalised products. There are over 32 categories to choose from. The words self-taught, sustainable and local are words which crop up regularly while trawling through some of the most amazing pages and products for sale. Teresa obviously saw a gap for a one-stop shopping site for people who wanted to shop online, but also who wanted to buy local. As Shop in Ireland blew up so quickly on Facebook, Teresa is now in the process of creating a new webpage, which will be much more user-friendly and will be available online at www.shopinireland.ie very soon. This will make it a lot easier for consumers to find out exactly what they're looking for faster without having to scroll through tons of Facebook posts. The possibilities on this new site are endless, such as advertising revenue and offering small, homegrown artisan businesses a global platform. The speed of which this has grown has clearly shown the demand. At this junction point where there's plenty of uncertainty, it is a very testing time for lots of small business owners who may not yet be online. Some now will scramble to do so over the next few weeks in order to save their business from extinction. A pandemic simply does not care about Christmas. MasterCard recently carried out a survey which found 80% of people would definitely shop locally this year. 78% of consumers said they would trust their local supplier or store as they prefer to buy from a familiar face. The main focus from consumers is also to help their local communities bounce back. The pandemic has given consumers a new appreciation for their local community and the convenience it offers. While our online and contactless spending has increased, small businesses are now finally seen as the backbone of each community and town, with some people choosing to move away from the big players such as Amazon. At the end of the day, Jeff Bezos will not be sponsoring your local GA club or soccer club. You won't see Amazon on the jerseys. It will be the local butchers, convenience store, or local pub or hotel. Online shopping competition has long been from China, the USA, or anywhere in the world. Research showed 37% of people surveyed had shopped online for the very first time during the first few months of the pandemic. The five most popular purchases made online are clothing, takeaway food, footwear, consumer electronics and home entertainment. Before level 5 lockdown, online sales had fallen from 15.3% back in April to 4.3% in September. Given the length of the current lockdown, this figure will no doubt rise sharply again in the coming weeks. On average, we are spending online approximately €775 million per month, or an annual figure of €9.3 billion. As we are now seeing a massive shift in how consumers in Ireland are spending their hard-earned money, this is leading to increased data and broadband usage and allowing SMEs and businesses to participate in digital life. Let's hope lots of spend is redirected back into Irish businesses this Christmas. So now, while we are in the midst of another lockdown, what did the first lockdown teach us? What did we learn? First, we may have been shopping more locally out of necessity rather than choice, but in doing so, it has now led us to discover a new appreciation for all our small towns and villages. The simple pleasure of having coffee in our local cafe, a browse in a local boutique or gift store, and soaking up the sense of community all around us. This hopefully in time will help our community recover quicker as they bounce back. Now more than ever, we must continue to support our local Irish businesses online. If you own a local business or a talented artist or crafter, remember, somewhere someone is looking for exactly what you have to offer. So let's continue to shop local, eat local, spend local, and most importantly, enjoy local.
So here's my lifelong wish, my grown-up Christmas list, not for myself, but for a world in need.
Thanks, Jenny, and I couldn't resist the temptation to put in a little Christmas song there at the end. Grown-up Christmas list, of course. Lots of ideas in there to help you to sort out your Christmas list and your Christmas shopping. And of course, make sure you do shop locally this Christmas and support all those local businesses who need our support during this difficult time. Now, coming up in the second part of the show, after the break, we'll be talking to David Bell from the HR department for our usual look at HR issues. This week, we're looking at remote working. And after that, PR guru and part of the Irish for Biden campaign and all-round American election expert Paul Allen will join Dave to have a look at what the implications are of the elections and how it might affect Irish business here as well. I'm sure we'll get to talk about all of that. All of that to come in the second part of Nearby Business, just after 6:30. And don't forget, if you want to get in touch, 087-69-44500 or at nearby_business, #localbiz. See you after the break.
90.3, this is Near FM and near.ie. And welcome back. Don't forget, if you'd like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories, you can contact the show by text while we are on the air at 087-6944-500 or anytime on Twitter at nearby_business, #localbiz.
Your HR questions answered on Nearby Business.
David Bell from the HR department is here with me now for our usual look at HR issues. Hiya, David.
Evening, Declan.
Good, good. David, this week we're going to talk about remote working, which has become a reality for a lot of people now. And we're going to look at what obligations employers have to their employees when they're working remotely. I suppose you could summarise it in one sentence, really. You have the same obligations as you do if they're in the office. Maybe you'd expand on that a bit, though, David.
Yes, Declan, I suppose that is the case. And as you say, home working or remote working has gone from being something that companies were looking at. We would have touched on it over the last couple of years in terms of flexible working and reflecting on work-life balance and the commute and all of those things that employers were already looking at it. And clearly, with COVID-19, it has been thrust upon a lot of people and is probably more permanent than would have been envisaged. So, yeah, it has gone from possibly being a bit of a perk where there wasn't a huge amount to be done by the employer, particularly in terms of arrangements. It was more of a facilitation, and now has become a much greater issue for people. And like everything else, employers tearing their hair out yet again, but it does fall to them to some extent, and you're right. If that is the workplace, the same rules apply.
Yeah. I know in the company that I work with, it was usually a couple of people from the IT department were usually the people who worked from home. So I don't know if that's the case everywhere else, but certainly in our business. But now everybody, all 250 people are working from home. So that's a little bit of a culture shock for the company. But I suppose let's have a look at some of the things so that employers have to think about. There's things like risk assessments to be done. There's obviously the workspace, the desk, the chair, all of those type of things. So how does all that work, particularly with the constraints of COVID-19?
Yeah, well, I think that is part of the problem in that where someone, I suppose, is working from home more regularly or permanently in the current environment, there is an obligation on the employer to make sure that I suppose there are two methods that have been adapted. One is, if you have a laptop, off you go, find your space and sort of, keep in touch, best of luck type of approach. And then there's the more, people are saying, well, look, I don't have a proper chair. I don't have a desk. My broadband is not good enough. Particularly, you know, if you move outside the urban areas, I think we're all very familiar with the challenges of broadband then and the country and parts of the country. So there are certainly things that employers would never have thought of, risk assessing someone's home or workspace. But again, I think where it becomes a more permanent solution, or as you say yourself, that's a significant number of people who are working from home. Now, and I suppose in practical terms, would it be expected that everyone's home is going to be visited? No. I don't think that would be an obligation. But I do think there would have to be some assessment made as to where the person is working from. You know, is it the couch? Is it the end of their bed? You know, or you know, is there any risk to their physical well-being first and foremost? And as you know, a lot of companies are getting into that. They're starting to look down the line and say, well, look, if this is going to be something more permanent, maybe we should start looking at putting some resources into buying equipment or furniture. Some of them are providing, you know, the IT supported, you know, laptops. They're paying for broadband. So all of those things are now starting to come into play, I suppose, to try and balance out what they potentially are not necessarily saving on it in the office, but down the line they might not have to pay for it. They're not going to have people in a big office space.
Yeah, and I mean, there is some responsibility here, David, on the employee as well. I mean, we've said there it's difficult for the employer to get out now and assess everybody's home. It's probably not practical, even if there wasn't the restrictions of COVID, to visit, you know, a large, and if you have hundreds of people working for you, it would be very difficult. It would take a long time in any case. But I mean, there is some trust in the employee to, if you like, fess up and say, you know, I need help, or I need a desk, or I need something, you know, but equally to make sure that they don't take advantage of that as well, I suppose.
Yeah, and again, there's always, as there is in the normal workplace, you know, employees have responsibilities as well, as you point out. So it's not that they can continue. They should highlight if there are issues. I mean, even, I suppose, this sounds sort of not extreme, but it has happened, is where there are individuals perhaps who don't have a space to work. They might be sharing a house or sharing an apartment, either as a younger person sharing with friends or siblings, or someone who is married or is in a partnership, and they just don't have the space. So in those situations, some of the clients that I work, for example, are treating them as necessary workers who need to come in, and they're being given letters to that effect.
Right.
So that is as much for their physical well-being and their mental well-being. There's a sort of a duality there. But clearly, if there isn't the proper space and people are being expected to stay remote working for a significant period of time, that is a solution, that they just cannot do it. It's just not safe for them. It's not practical, and it's not a long-term solution. So some of those people, so, you know, obviously you have to make sure it's a safe environment for them to return. But they are being treated as essential workers as part of the sort of definition. Other things people are looking at doing, it's examining whether there are pod-likes or remote, offices nearer the work, near the home of some of these individuals, you know, that they could maybe rent out temporarily, or the short-term type of arrangements. So that's something else that people are looking at, particularly where they're seeing it as more of a permanent solution.
So that's kind of those sort of shared working spaces that you see, and office hubs and so on, that. And would the employer have the same, I presume, duty of care to check that they're all up to scratch as well?
Absolutely. But again, most of them are run by, you know, organisations that are well used to this, and they would have their own. So the employer can't completely hand over responsibility, but certainly if they were entering into a formal arrangement with someone, they, I'm sure they would make it clear that it was on the basis that the area was safe and all of that was covered. And most of them would be. They would be at a very high professional specification, similar to an office. So that would probably be another solution for some people where, you know, their home space. And again, it does come down to, there is this sort of remote working and home working. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're working from home. It just means you're not going into the office.
Sure.
For a large group of people, that means working from home. But I'm sure you've seen it yourself, Declan, if you're talking to people on Zoom meetings or Teams meetings or whatever you use, people are at all sorts of different.
They are.
Some people look very set up and then others look less so. And I think, you know, it's important, as you say, that there is, you know, look, with all these things, there's a communication and people are involved in trying to solve those situations.
Yeah, and you're right. You see people from a very slick, clearly almost office-like setups to the kitchen table, right to, as you mentioned there, the side of the bed. So it is, and again, as an employer, I think if you see that, you would be obliged to do something about it. You know, if you see when you're talking to some of your employees on a Teams or a Zoom call, as you say, and you see someone clearly sitting on the end of the bed, well, it's time maybe to do something about that. I think, Dave, as well, maybe there's probably some other groups, maybe at-risk groups or sensitive risk groups that maybe need to be given that little bit of extra care and attention. Would that be fair?
Yeah, again, I suppose there are people who might be, there could be physical situations, there could be people who are, I mean, some of this, Declan, I suppose, as I said, what it might have been a bit of utopia for people to think of working from home, I think we've all experienced, and it's a lot of coverage about it, and that it hasn't been the great solution for a lot of people. It has been quite difficult for a lot of people. So, I think one has to be very conscious that there may be different things that you wouldn't have thought of. I mean, I think the social element of things and companies are now looking to see how can they make the day a bit more normal for inverted commas, because I think we've touched on this before, a lot of people are working completely differently when they wouldn't normally work in the office. I mean, very few people go into an office environment and sit there on their own without any real interaction apart from meetings day in, day out. So I think there is a lot more focus on how you're going to break up the day, you know, give people a chance, not feel the sense that they're on all the time, inverted commas. And I think that has all been adapted. And then, you know, as you say, there are people who there might be different circumstances that they'll need a bit more additional support or additional thought gone into, you know, if they are working from home, depending on the particular circumstances.
Yeah, and one idea for people, one thing we've started to do recently is just a coffee break chat. So for, you know, typically, you know, in an organisation of the size that I described there, 200 or 300 people, you know, there's a canteen, so you go and have a cup of coffee maybe at 11 or half 10 or half 9 or whatever time you wanted to, and you generally meet people maybe that weren't in the same department or the same part of the business and just have a casual chat about, you know, something that was on the telly or a match or something. We've started to do that now where we've got sort of nominated people who sort of host a coffee break for people at different times of the day, just to, as you say, to break up the day, that it's not all business focused, and that, you know, there is a little bit of the normal gossip, I suppose, to the day as well, if you like.
Yeah, and I think that's a very, very valuable thing. I mean, without getting legalistic, there's obviously also the legal obligation on people to make sure. Yeah. And obviously when people are in the office and you can have a break or there's lunch breaks and everyone be familiar with that and keeping an eye that everyone's getting their breaks. Obviously, if people are not working in the office, it's harder to do, but the obligations are still there to make sure that people aren't working in excess of the hours that they're obliged to work or contractually obliged to work, and that they take breaks and that they get their lunch and they have a break. I think that's a very good idea. Apart from the, you know, psychological impact, and that's, as you said, it's quite common for someone just to put the head around the door, grab a coffee, have a chat about something, go for a walk, go down to the canteen. And it's difficult, obviously, to replicate that, but I think that's a very good idea. And I think a lot of people are now realising that they need to start thinking about this, because, you know, the likelihood is in maybe the near and medium term that this is going to become more common. And a lot of people are now putting themselves in a situation where they're going to be able to implement this type of arrangement much more permanently for themselves.
Absolutely, yeah. And, of course, the other thing now, I think we might have got away with it up till now, but we have to come back to having a policy for this as well. And as you said, up till now, it was maybe a bit of a luxury for some parts of some companies, but now it's become a reality. So really, you do need to write it down and have a home working policy, I presume, would be your recommendation?
Yeah, I think so. And start to think about it again. Yeah. As I said, people are starting to look at all that and start to examine what they're going to provide, all of the risks, the risk assessment, pointing out the employee responsibilities, how things are going to be communicated. All of those things are going to have to be captured either individually or on a group-wide basis. And introducing things like you mentioned there, how is the day going to be structured? And it's not just, as I said, grab the laptop and head home and we'll see you on Zoom,
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a million, David Bell from the HR department, as usual. Thanks for covering that topic so well for us. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Declan.
David Bell there from the HR department for a regular look at HR issues.
I don't know what's wrong with just taking your laptop home, working away, as you used to do. All right, it's hard to take it out in the golf course, I can tell you that.
Yeah, that's why...
If there was a golf course open,
exactly. Very good. Okay, in a moment, we're going to take a short break, and in a moment, we're going to be talking to Paul Allen in the day job. I suppose Paul is a PR guru, runs his own business. Very well known in business circles for that business. But we're going to talk to him tonight. He's part of the Irish for Biden campaign, and Dave is going to chat to him after this short break.
You're listening to Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM. Every Thursday at 6 p.m, the local, national and international business news headlines with a focus on what affects us here in Northeast Dublin. Regular features on the programme will include the Business Of section, where each week a different industry or industry leader will be here to chat about what makes their business work. The latest too in technology needed to make sure your business remains at the leading edge. HR issues will be discussed, as well as a particular focus on looking at matters from the employer's point of view. Being an entrepreneur can be a lonely pursuit, so there'll be a regular look at what supports are available for business in the local area. And a host of special features as well. Don't forget, if you would like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories, you can text while the show is on the air to 087 69 44 500 or at any time on Twitter at @nearby_business. Near FM's business programme is Nearby Business.
And welcome back to the programme again and to the final stretch this evening. If you've been under a rock or you've been somewhere not on this planet, you would probably not know that there's your US election on at the moment and is running into its third or fourth day as we speak. We're joined now by Paul Allen, who's a PR guru from Paul Allen & Associates, and he's also part of the Irish for Biden campaign. Good evening, Paul. Welcome to the programme.
Good evening, David. Thanks for the invite.
Okay, what's the latest on the news from the US at the moment?
Well, in the context of the election and what's going on, Joe Biden has 264 electoral points to Trump's 214. So we're on the cusp of victory. He's six electoral votes away from the keys of the White House and being the 46th president of the United States.
Okay, that's on paper. And we know a lot about paper because there's been arguments about votes being delivered late and counted late. And the legal challenge is now being proposed by Donald Trump's side, by the Republicans. How successful are they going to be and how long is it going to take?
Well, in typical American media form, they're talking this as legal warfare. And the legal warfare is targeting lawsuits to Michigan, Pennsylvania and Georgia, all the key swing states. But essentially, the lawyers are scratching their head and asking the outgoing president, what are the basis of his legal challenge? Because some feel, and some insiders in the Trump machine reckon, that he doesn't fully understand the complexities as to what's involved. You can obviously take a court case. You can take a court case against a local shop or some supplier who hasn't supplied the goods that are supposedly in good condition and failed to and poisoned customers or something and ruined your reputation. Sure, that's the basis of, obviously, I'm sure, a good legal challenge. But on this basis, they're completely gazumped. The American law is rather strange when it comes to the election. And you would think in a digital age, particularly the greatest country in the world, they would actually be able to get this together. If a vote happens 3 or 4 days after the election date, they can still count it. And you would think that the system should be a bit more digitized, but it's simply not.
Okay, just let's go back a little bit to the beginning of the election and the actual campaign. Did the Democrats take it for granted that they were leading by 7 and 9 and all the points that they were? Were they taken by surprise that the Trump vote came out the way it did?
Well, yes, it's back to the pollsters. And I think when it came to the Republicans, they were either shy or they were either sly. They weren't telling the pollsters the correct information, because obviously with the likes of Donald Trump, he attracts a certain type of person. He's deemed a sexist, racist man who wants to divide and conquer. That's the sort of style he is. It's like if you have a break in a piece of stone, he's wedging he's trying to wedge the blocks apart. It's black or white, it's COVID or non-COVID. It's peaceful protest or opposed to violent tension. So he's a binary man, and that's the way he tends to operate. You might think successfully. I would obviously think that it'll come to a time where people say, why on earth did he get to be president of the United States? In the same breath, people would say, why on earth did the pound shop prime minister in the UK, Boris Johnson, become the prime minister? So all will tell, and also I assume people will start distancing themselves from Donald Trump and concerned his tweets. Who cares what he says? Because obviously now the Twitter police, the Twitter safety police, are now coming out and putting stickers on all his aggressive tweets.
Donald Trump traded on not being a politician, though. Whereas Joe Biden had been vice president for 8 years with Obama. So is Joe Biden the man this time?
Well, certainly Joe Biden will. You're dealing with America. It's a divided country. We in Ireland need a friend in the White House. Joe Biden will be the second Irish-American Catholic in the White House. He will try and help restore peace. He's very committed and already said, including the Irish Congressman Brendan Boyle, that when it comes to Brexit, when it comes to restoring peace on the island of Ireland and maintaining that, the Good Friday Agreement is not for discussion, despite what the British Tory Party and the British government are saying. So the Brits will have to recalibrate their attitudes towards America and, more importantly, ourselves when it comes to a hard border.
So this is bad news, effectively for Britain, because it's the trade deal, which was effectively open to them under the Trump administration, will no longer be there as easily got as it was. Would that be the case?
Absolutely. And the pound shop prime minister in the UK, along with obviously the UK, the American president, they bounced off each other, and you know, one was worse than the other. But meanwhile, Ireland's in the middle of this, and Ireland's trading is paramount. We need to obviously continue. We don't know where the hard Brexit's going to take us. Please God, we'll obviously survive the COVID, and obviously people who are still grieving in relation to that, not alone personally, but also their businesses. People are shut. How will they restore business? There's only a few more weeks left in this year to try and get back up on your feet and pay bills, pay staff, and drive on. These are difficult times, and obviously when it comes to Brexit, where's this going to take us?
Yeah, we don't need the both together, but that's another day's subject. Just in relation to the 6 weeks we have between the time that Donald Trump has to either be removed or will leave the White House, pending these legal challenges and you know, the continuous litigation that will happen as a result of the counting and the votes and the this and that and the other. Trump supporters are at count stations, menacingly standing outside with guns, chanting, "Count the votes." Okay.
Yeah, well, they were the same band of merry men and women that wanted to fire Fauci, the man who's trying to help people overcome issues. And America is literally thwarted with COVID-19. This is an issue that needs to be obviously sorted. But the duration in time of the president in terms of next year, he has a number of weeks in office. There's various theories that will he pardon himself? Here's one for you. Another theory today, will he step down? Mike Pence will step in as the president. He will pardon Trump, because apparently you now can't pardon yourself. And it's very, very fascinating as to what's going to happen. But this is the most powerful country in the world. This is the most important job in the world. And the way things are going, somebody like Joe Biden will restore confidence, will restore matters to relax. He'll replace fear with hope. It'll be fact rather than fiction. It's essential that we restore. There's so much pressure on people in business and in day-to-day life. We will restore some level of normality to the world, we hope.
The Donald said he was going to go straight to the Supreme Court. That doesn't happen. They have to go through different local courts and so on to get themselves up through the to the Supreme Court for the final arbitration. He has packed the Supreme Court with Conservative judges of his own selection, and they are lifetime appointments. Will this have a bearing on the outcome?
I don't think so, because when it comes to a statement of law, I'm not a lawyer, it stands and falls on its 2 feet. But once again, I'm not an apologist or a spokesperson on behalf of him. I'm just thrilled that we, on the Irish for Biden campaign that encourage Irish Americans to phone a friend, ring a relative, call a cousin, managed to basically immobilize people to do this. It's certainly not the result we wanted. It became slow and difficult. We were saying that the first time was going to be Florida. If he romped home in Florida, it would be an easy night. It was a difficult night. It's a difficult 2 nights. And it's not an election night. It's going to go on for the next couple of weeks. Because when you factor in, as you said, David, the litigation that's going to happen, you don't know where this is going to go. But the fact is, on a fact of law, I don't think he's any grounds to go on.
Okay, just in terms of Ireland, the Biden positive impact on Ireland?
It's going to be remarkable. Obviously, the government of the day with Taoiseach Micheál Martin and Taoiseach Leo Varadkar obviously have to, and Simon Coveney, have to be caution who they align themselves, because if things turn around and they back the wrong man, our goose is cooked, so to speak. But it's an important time, and you know, we need to be kind of bonding with people. Ireland needs America, and Ireland needs American and North American visitors to come back in and spend money in our shops and eat in our restaurants and drink coffee in the coffee houses. So it's essential that we get back to that. And Joe Biden has, like he said, and again on our website, Irish for Biden, he talks about his importance for Ireland, what it means to him and his family and his legacy. And in fact, when we organized the visit in 2016 on behalf of Louth County Council, we did that, and little did we know that about 9 weeks later, he snuck back into the country, unbeknownst to anybody, on an Aer Lingus flight into Shannon, did the west of Ireland, and himself and his brother then hopped up to Carlingford, unbeknownst to anybody. So he talks fondly about his time in Ireland. And when we were working with him during the Ireland for Hillary campaign, I asked him, would you consider coming, you know, running the going for president? He winked and said, you never know, I might have a go at it. And here we are. You know, obviously, it's a historical time. It's a great time. And please God, it'll go well for him.
Well, Paul, you better get yourself a green tie, because he may be coming back to see you. I think, and he may be the man. And I think you're very unfair aligning Boris Johnson with the pound shop business, to the pound shop business, I believe. Okay, thank you for talking to us this evening on Nearby Business.
Good evening, guys.
Thanks.
And thanks to Paul there. Very passionate and insightful, David, about that subject. Yeah,
very good. AOB on Nearby Business.
So just time under any other business. Revenue versus a pharma company with $1.64 billion on offer.
Yeah, you have to be careful of your tax categorisation. The Irish pharmaceutical company Perrigo has failed in a High Court bid to overturn a $1.64 billion Irish tax demand. We could deal with that at the moment. The Irish registered firm, known formerly as Elan, was acquired by Perrigo in 2013, was hit with a revised tax assessment in 2018 for over alleged underpayment of tax relating to a transaction with rival pharma company Biogen. The revised demand relates to the 2013 sale of Biogen of Perrigo's 50% interest in the intellectual property linked to multiple sclerosis drug Tysabri. Revenue categorised this sale as a capital rather than a trading transaction, meaning it was subject to an effective tax of 33% rather than the standard of 12.5% corporation tax. Revenue issued a revised tax demand after an audit on the company in 2016. Now, in a lengthy judgment, Judge McDonald said Perrigo had failed to establish any basis to interfere with the assessment, and Perrigo said, we will now enter either an appeal of the decision or move to challenge the merits of the assessment before the Tax Appeals Commission. We strongly believe the company will ultimately prevail on these merits. Okay, so there you go. Excellent. So you want to be careful when you're filling out your tax form, Declan.
Tick the right box. Tick the right box. So. That's it for this week's edition of Nearby Business. Thanks a million to all our contributors this evening. Just as a side, the Late Late Show this week has a special on small businesses. Particularly that same sort of focus we had in our column tonight, supporting small businesses for Christmas. We'll both be back with another Nearby Business at the same time next week. That's 6 p.m. on Thursday.
In the meantime, we wish you good business. Stay safe, and don't forget, if you have an idea or would like to discuss with us or get in touch with the programme or anytime on Twitter at @nearby_business, #localbiz. So for me, Dave Daly.
And myself, Declan Ralph. Bye for now. See you soon on the radio.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.